Hey everyone, it's Matt Katz in for Tanzina Vega, who's under the weather today. Last week marked the start of Pride Month, the annual celebration of the LGBTQ community throughout the month of June. Pride has taken on a more somber tone this year as uprisings against police brutality and a global pandemic continue. And for members of the Black LGBTQ community, this moment has been a reminder of the parallels between what we're seeing today and the early days of the rights movement, namely that both are rooted in police violence. For more on this, we're joined by Imara Jones, founder and creator of Translash Media and journalist in residence at WNYC's The Green Space. Imara, thanks for joining us.
Hello, how are you?
Hi. Also with us is Earl Folks Jr., the president and CEO of the Center for Black Equity. Earl, thank you for being here.
It's my pleasure. Thank you for asking me.
Imara, let's start with some history. What role did Black and Brown activists play at the start of the LGBTQ rights movement?
Yeah, Black and Brown activists played a pivotal role in LGBTQ rights. We would not have the movement that we have if it were not for Black and Brown, specifically trans and gender nonconforming people, as we would say today. So not only the names that you hear often, like Marsha P. Johnson, who's a Black trans woman, and Sylvia Rivera, who was a Latinx trans woman, but also others like Miss Major, and there are many, many names in that beginning, opening, first couple of nights of Stonewall. But even though Black and Brown trans people started the movement, they were very deliberately pushed out of the movement over the next 4 to 5 years. So they've not been able to benefit. We have not been able to benefit fully from the movement that we created.
And do you see the protests that we're seeing right now is more in line with Pride's real roots than maybe the massive Pride parades that people may associate more with Pride Month, Imara?
Yeah, as I say to people often, Pride, everyone's like, oh, this month Pride is different. And I said, no, Pride is, like you just stated, actually returning to its roots. You know, of course, Stonewall began as a rebellion against police brutality and a police raid against Stonewall, which was known to be a bar that was frequented by Black and Brown queer people, trans and gender nonconforming, and was targeted by the police as an easier target for a raid than predominantly white gay bars. And so the very roots of it are that. And over the first couple of nights, that's why it was a battle between these communities and police because of that. And so, you know, as the saying goes, Stonewall was a riot. We have to remember that. And so Pride now is deemed as a celebration, but it started out as a dramatic pushback against police brutality. But because we know that police misconduct is tied to a larger system that is enforcing a hierarchy, enforcing marginalization, it then grew into a larger call for political and economic rights, which happened the next year after the Stonewall Rebellion. So this is actually the 50th year of the first march. And in that march was a call for these greater rights. But and it was also organized in large part by a group of drag queens and trans women, and then expanded. So those are the roots that we are growing from at this moment.
Earl, do you think the Black LGBTQ community has been erased from the history of that of the movement, and are we maybe starting to see a shift from that today?
Well, you know, whoever gets it right, the history tells it through their lens. And the fact of the matter is that the participation of Black and Brown individuals in the greater LGBTQ's queer space has been whitewashed by white historians who don't know or didn't do enough research or didn't care or purposely excluded our participation in these movements. We've always been part of every movement, and we've been part of every war. And so to say that what happens is that people get caught up in who threw the first rock, who was the first person to throw the first rock at Stonewall, and they get caught up with that. And no one asks who fired the first shot at Lexington. no one cares. A shot was fired and it started a revolution. And the fact of the matter is, a brick was thrown through the window and a revolution started. And black and brown individuals have always been part of the greater queer movement. And we unfortunately have not written our own history, and therefore we suffer the results of that, and that's exclusion.
And Earl, in the same way, the killing of black transgender people by the police, like Tony McDade in Florida, hasn't gotten the same level of attention as other incidents of police brutality, right?
Well, you know, let's go even deeper than that. Is the fact of the matter is that when we say Black Lives Matter, it should be all Black Lives Matter. I've heard of incidents from my colleagues from around the country where queer black folks have been marched and they've been harassed by some of the people who are marching in the parade and who object to their presence in these demonstrations and this rebellion. And the fact of the matter is that we have to deal as black people, we have to deal with homophobia and transphobia within the black community, and we have to deal with racism in the greater LGBTQ space.
Earl, you've played a key role in the spread of Black Pride celebrations across the world. Why was it important for you to create space for the Black LGBTQ community?
Well, for precisely what I stated before, we, those of us who are people of color, is particularly Black and Brown folks, we have our feet in two sets of communities. We have our feet in the Black community, which is often hostile to our aspiration of full citizenship and equal rights. And we have then we have to deal with the racism of the white community, which we've talked so much about recently. And the fact is that we need to create a safe space for our community members. And Black Pride, there are about 55 Black queer prides around the world today. Most are in the United States, and we draw about 500,000 people each year. And these people come to our events because they want a safe space. They don't want to have to be one or the other. They can actually celebrate being black and being queer. And especially for our marginalized parts of our community, such as youth, seniors, transgender men and women, this is very important. We continue to create safe spaces for people to become full citizens and enjoy who they are and be productive. And that's, you know, that's all we want, is to be productive members of our society and have equal rights and equal access to the institutions of our society. And that's what Black Pride helps facilitates.
Earl, I'm curious about the presence of law enforcement at these events. I've seen police at other Pride events. Are they also at these Black Pride celebrations?
Well, you know, interesting. I can't speak for all the prides, but I probably have attended 300 prides of all kinds in the world, around the world, and I can say that in the Washington D.C., which is where we have the largest Black Pride, which is 75,000 people attend, in Atlanta, which is also has a large Black Pride and a large outdoor presence, police are at a minimum. They're at a minimum. The reality is that we don't need a lot of police force presence. And especially this new type of policing that we've seen since the 9/11, this paramilitary policing, you know, we stand for community policing where police officers or law enforcement live in the community, are part of the community, and understand the community. And we don't usually need a lot of law enforcement. Our people don't need that. We may have minimal security, but we very rarely have incidents within our spaces that require a lot of police presence or law enforcement. Police are welcome to come. Some do come in and out of uniform, but they understand that this is a community event and they're coming as community members, not to enforce rules or for crowd control. We can control our own people.
Imara, given the protests against police brutality around the country, have you been thinking about alternative ways to honor or observe Pride right now?
Well, I mean, I think we have to, given the reality of COVID. And I think a lot of the movement has moved online and has gone digital, like in a lot of places. And so I think because of where we are in the moment, that's happening, and that there is an emphasis on on protest and on activism and on supporting local organizations which are doing the work for marginalized communities that don't get a lot of the focus. I think that that's really important. But if I could, I wanted to just return to a couple of points that were made earlier. By Earl, who is legend in our community for many reasons that you are hearing about this morning. I think it's really important to realize that it's not only that that history may or may not have been written by people, it's also because people were deliberately pushed out. In the 1974 march in Washington Square Park, Sylvia Rivera was deliberately pushed out by white lesbian and gay organizers who took over the movement. You can actually see that in reality. There is video of her being booed off the stage and banned because of that. And so our exclusion has been deliberate. It's not been by an act of omission. You know, it's been an act of commission. And on this point of what's happening, I think for me, one of the harshest realities that took place last week, actually literally a week ago, is the beating of Ayanna Dior, who is a trans woman, by a mob in a convenience store in Minneapolis, St. Paul. And many of these people are the same people who called for her who are calling for Black Lives Matter, the end of police brutality and the end of mistreatment, but then saw her as less than human and set upon her in a way that they are asking that other people not do them. And the fact that was in George Floyd's city is really searing. As I wrote about, actually poses a dilemma for a lot of Black trans women about the degree to which we participate in a lot of the protests that are happening right now. I think that's an individual decision, but it is one that people are wrestling with. So there are complexities here that flow out of the last 50 years.
Earl, taking those complexities, how does this moment and this movement change the way we think about Pride moving forward? Are you looking at it through a more nuanced, more complicated lens? And where do you think it goes from here?
Well, as a member of the overall LGBTQ space, and not just Black Pride, Black DC, for all of our Black Prides, we don't take a lot of commercial dollars. We're under-resourced as is, and those are basically, we use the resources within our community. But looking at the larger Pride events, like in New York and Washington and in the larger cities, where they have become, Amara is correct, they've become commercialized. They've become corporate. All the corporate sponsorships, the pride parades now last hours, you know, sometimes up to 10 hours and longer. The New York Pride Parade is much too long and much too much corporate sponsorship. It should be people in the community. It used to be a time at the beginning of the Pride movement, of the modern day Pride movement, because there's always been people doing things in to advance LGBTQ rights in our movement, in our community. But at the beginning, anyone could march in the parade. You didn't have to register. You didn't have to pay. You just stood and marched. And we need, like people are doing now, and we need to get back to corporations can support our community in different ways and provide resources in different ways other than spending millions of dollars and putting on a pride parade. Parade should be for people just to walk. And anyone could join in the parade like they used to be. Like the Halloween parade in New York used to be very, very spontaneous, and people would dress up and march. Now you have to register, and that takes away from the whole spirit of it. And who wants to sit through a 10-hour corporate parade?
Shorter and more focused going forward. Earl Foulkes Jr. is the president and CEO of the Center for Black Equity, and Amara Jones is founder and creator of Translash Media and a journalist in residence at WNYC's The Green Space. Thank you to you both.
Thank you so much for having us.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.